Welcome to The State of the Planet, a UN Environment Programme production. I'm Tim Albone, your host. Today, in episode 2, I'm joined by Dr. Henry Neufeld, the head of Section, Impact Investment and Adaptation Analysis at the UNEP DTU Partnership. Today, Henry and I discuss adaptation and what it means, COVID-19 and its impact on adaptation, planning, finance and implementation, the 2020 Adaptation Gap Report and what it actually shows, and the global stock take that's due in 2023. So, over to the podcast. So, Henry, thank you very much for joining me today on this podcast. We hear a lot about adaptation, and I just wondered if we could start by talking about what exactly that means.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. And it's a real pleasure to be here on this podcast. So, when we talk about adaptation, we're talking about a process that is related to responding to climate change to lower climate risks. Ultimately, we do that to reduce the risk we are exposed to or are expected to be exposed to in the future by responding reactively, coping, or in anticipation or planning for these changes that will come. You know, we have different ways of doing this in public sectors and private sectors. They respond to these climate risks, and the way we reduce the climate risks through this process of adaptation is by reducing the exposure to climate hazards or by reducing the vulnerability or increasing the resilience of people, of communities, of individuals, of countries to these climate risks. And that's basically the process through which we have to address adaptation. This is the process of adaptation. There's a strong link to development here, particularly when it comes to the way we understand adaptation, because there is no measure like the one we have for mitigation. The overarching metric we use is CO2 equivalents, carbon dioxide equivalents. In adaptation, we don't have that. It's a combination, a mix of many, many different metrics that combine together and tell us something about our exposure to these climate hazards and our vulnerability to them. A lot has to do with development. It has to do with the way people can respond because they are sheltered or because they are able to withstand the hazards by public and private means, by reducing their vulnerabilities to these climate hazards. So there's also a link to maladaptation. I think I should mention that when we do adaptation without, or when we do development without considering climate hazards, climate risks, then very often what we result in doing is actually maladaptation because we don't anticipate the side effects. For instance, when we do adaptation in a watershed and we're not considering what will happen downstream, we might be producing maladaptation downstream to other people. And there is also some form of maladaptation if we don't consider current and future trajectories of climate change, which will also affect the outcomes of our actions. And then there is also a spatial, as I've mentioned, there's a spatial context here. So it's a multidimensional process that needs to be considered. And if we don't take that into account, our coping strategies can often result in maladaptation, and that's not good. And we have to avoid that to the degree possible.
Henry, 2020 has been a bit of a strange year, and I imagine this has also had an impact on adaptation, you know, I mean, particularly COVID-19. Could you talk about how that has affected adaptation?
I mean, this year has been such a strange year with everybody having to change their behaviors in ways we haven't experienced for at least a century, I think. In the short term, I think COVID-19 is going to affect adaptation in the way that people and governments have to address this urgent, the pandemic urgently. That means their focus has changed from climate change, which was really high on the agenda before COVID hit, to now managing the pandemic, to reducing the number of casualties, the people that die or are really affected by COVID, and also the economic, the socioeconomic fallout of this pandemic that we are all experiencing in terms of loss of income and downturn of the economy. So these are things that are happening and that need to happen in the short term, and that have led to the fact that adaptation and climate change in general has been lower on the agenda than it has been before. In the longer term, I think there's going to be some real impacts of COVID on climate responses, adaptation, but possibly also mitigation, because public sector finance will be much more strapped. There will be less investments in adaptation. And that, of course, is a real problem for, particularly for developing countries, which are already much harder hit by COVID than the rich nations. And, you know, they have less capacity, they have less ability to respond to the threats. And then when a finance situation becomes more difficult in the longer term future because of the economic downturn globally, then we will see that developing countries will struggle more and will have more difficulties responding to the growing climate threats and reducing climate risks. So that means that in the longer term, we can expect COVID-19 to be having really strong impacts on adaptation. What we don't know yet is exactly how much that's going to be the case. So it's an ongoing question that we're trying to respond to. We only have limited information with regard to how that will actually work in the longer term. At the same time, I think there is a real opportunity for governments to use the pandemic as an opportunity to bounce back better, to use the opportunity of having to readdress major issues we deal with as a global community with regard to climate resilience and low emission economies. So by investing in green technologies and climate resilient technologies, and by using the means that governments at all levels have to restructuring the investments into these climate resilient, low emission technologies and development pathways, we can use this pandemic as an opportunity to bounce back better. Unfortunately, that is not happening as far as we can see, and this opportunity is being wasted to a large degree.
Henry, the Adaptation Gap Report mentions planning, finance, and implementation to help bridge the adaptation gap. What does that mean practically? Could you talk about that a little bit?
So we structured the Adaptation Gap Report around planning, finance, and implementation because they are key dimensions of adaptation. We not only adaptation, also mitigation, if you think about it that way, but in the mitigation process, you know, we have this overarching metric, which we don't have for adaptation. And our best bets in addressing the process of adaptation as it's being implemented at national levels, which is the focus of our report, is by looking at the ambition that countries put forward through their plans in adaptation, by laws, by climate strategies, nationally determined contributions, their national adaptation plans. These are the instruments which governments have to explain what they're planning to do and how they view climate risks in the future being addressed. At the same time, we need to look at the finance of implementing adaptation. Finance is part of the means of implementation, which also include technology and capacity. But without finance, any priority we talk about that doesn't have a budget line is just, in my view, hot air. So finance is a measure of commitment that we make to address adaptation. If there is an element of support provided by developed countries, and then there is, of course, also an element of support received by developing countries. So that's important to bear in mind. And both elements here of support are important in the context of adaptation finance. So planning, finance, and then of course implementation in the context of the actions that countries undertake to address climate risks. And in the context of the support provided and received, ultimately lead to the results that we need to look at in the context of adaptation. Very often these actions are still in progress. Very few have